Welcome to the Code Nibby podcast, where we talk to people on their coding journey in hopes of helping you on yours. I'm your host, Saran, and before we kick off the show, I have a few announcements for you. We've got two really great sponsors of the Code Nibby community. If you're looking to level up your tech skills, SitePoint has you covered. You'll find help on web development, CSS, JavaScript, PHP, and much more. They've got thousands of articles, videos, books, all available to you online. So sign up today to level up on your web development skills. I'm also excited to tell you about Thinkful, an online programming school designed for career advancement. You get paired up with a professional software engineer, and together you build real hands-on projects. They have part-time courses that are great for busy professional people like you who are excited about tech. And when you're done, they have a career services program that helps you find the job that you're waiting for. And they're giving CodeNibby listeners 10% off of their front-end web development course. So go to thinkful.com/CodeNibby and check it out. And finally, this month, we're teaming up with Scott Hanselman from Hansel Minutes for our campaign, March is for Makers, our month-long celebration of everything hardware and making. So if you're curious about hardware, and you've always wondered about things like Raspberry Pis and Arduinos and how they work, go to marchesformakers.com, and we've got videos, podcast episodes, blog posts, all this great stuff to help you get started. And we're continuing the celebration with this very episode. Our guest today is Matt Richardson, evangelist for the Raspberry Pi Foundation. Matt, do you want to say hi?
Hello. Great to be here.
Matt, I'm so excited to have you on the show. Are you excited to be on the show with us?
I am so excited. This is wonderful.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about the Raspberry Pi Foundation. I'm assuming they make the Raspberry Pi, but tell me a little bit more about that group.
That's correct. We are a nonprofit foundation with a mission of advancing computer science education. The way we do that is by making a really, really inexpensive computer board, about $35, that can be used as a general purpose computer, can be used as a learning computer, can be used as the brains to a robot, or it can be used in industrial and commercial settings as well.
I really like the idea of it being the brains to a robot. That sounds so cool.
Yeah, and that's where I got my first start with Raspberry Pi. I was making physical projects, and I thought, hey, this is really neat. This is a full-on computer that is inexpensive and can be put right inside something that moves or something that you interact with. And I started using it and getting really excited about it.
Yeah, so I think that traditionally when we think about computers, we think of, you know, desktops with a big casing that has a bunch of stuff in it. And I think of my laptop, which is, you know, small, but still pretty big. But when I look at the Raspberry Pi, it's you know, maybe the size of my phone, maybe a little bit bigger. I have such a hard time believing that the computer really boils down to just that one little thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is like whenever I talk about Raspberry Pi, the first thing I say about it is that it's a computer really in an earnest sense. You can hook up a keyboard, monitor, and mouse to it, and you get a desktop environment where you can browse the web, you can check your email, you can look at videos, and then on top of it, there's all these coding tools on it, and you could play games on it too. So it really is a computer in an earnest sense.
So I still think it kind of like blows away this idea of what a computer is. So if you're telling me the Raspberry Pi is a computer, I kind of want you to tell me, what is a computer?
Well, that's a good question. That's a tough one. What is a computer? I was recently at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California, and when they show what a computer is, they start with an abacus and they start with these basic counting tools.
Oh, wow.
And these, you know, in that sense, it's any tool that helps you, starting with calculations and then working your way up from there. In the sense of when we talk about computers in everyday life, we think of, you know, the keyboard and monitor, mouse, or, you know, the trackpad kind of computer, of course.
So you got started with Raspberry Pis and that kind of thing because you were making physical objects. Where did that story begin? What objects were you making?
So I was, at the time, with technology, I've gone in and out of the world of technology, and I, as a kid, would play around with computers. I would teaching myself to program. My father was helping me learn to program, and when I really wanted to make physical objects, I wanted to make electronics, and I had a hard time doing that as a kid, and this was in the 80s and early 90s, and I tried. I had a neighbor who helped me a lot with making like LEDs blink and everything, but I had a hard time with it. And a lot of time passed. I did computer stuff as a hobby. And then one day I kind of stumbled across this thing called Arduino, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of out there.
Yeah.
And for me, the Arduino was a sort of a big breakthrough for me. It let me be comfortable with electronics. It let me be comfortable with making what I wanted to make. It made it really easy for me to be able to make what I wanted to make. And so I started making things with Arduino. Like I made a project that you connected up to your television, and anytime you heard, anytime it sensed words coming through the television you didn't want to hear about, and for me at the time it was like Kim Kardashian and Donald Trump, it would mute the TV for you.
Nice.
And so I thought, you know, I thought it was so neat that we could, you know, use a technology like Arduino and build what we wanted instead of waiting for companies to make the things that we wanted. And so I made some things that were practical, some things that were a little bit more artistic and cheeky. And you know, the Arduino was really a reintroduction to me into making with technology and making with electronics.
So if you have a problem that can be solved by making, you know, a gadget or building something, that totally makes sense to me. But it sounds like your desire to make kind of came before you saw the application for it. Is that right?
Sometimes that is the case. Sometimes I'll think of something I want. Another example was when I used to write for Make Magazine, and I saw all these great projects out there. I always call them awesome. This is awesome. That's awesome. And look at this awesome thing. And realized I was overusing the word awesome. And I said, I need a tool, a button on my keyboard that fills in some synonym for awesome, like fantastic or incredible. And so I made something like
that's
that.
That's a good one.
Yeah. And so sometimes the projects come from what I need or what I want, but then other times projects come from me exploring a technology and saying, oh, here's a neat, interesting technology. What could it possibly be used for? And then it's sort of like the ideas sort of percolate there. And then eventually you come up with something and an object that never existed before.
So why make stuff? What is the, you know, apart from the practical implications of it, what is the satisfaction or the feeling, or, you know, what's the motivation behind making stuff?
For me, making stuff is like scratching an itch. You know, there's something that doesn't exist in the world, and you want it to exist in the world, and you want to show it to people, and you want to share it with people. And so that's definitely huge, huge motivation for me. I enjoy when I throw something out there and people start sharing it and saying, hey, isn't that neat? Or they riff on an idea and they take the code I made and work it into their own project. There's something really, really satisfying about that, seeing something you thought of kind of go out and spread like virally out there.
Yeah, that sounds very exciting. So to do something like that, and I don't want to kind of make the conversation like a software versus hardware conversation, because that's not really fair. But what is the advantage that you see to doing that and, you know, having your idea spread through hardware versus something similar in software? How do you kind of see those two working together or differently?
You know, I don't think there's such a huge difference. I think with hardware, it's harder to share. You know, with software, obviously, you can share it much more easily with other people. They can download it, or they can use your web application, for instance. With hardware, you kind of have to like put together a video and show people how it works. But there is some sort of novelty, though, when it's like I made a thing that exists. There's something more tangible about it, and I think people are like, wow, like I want to have that thing. Whereas when you make a web app, I feel like that doesn't really come through. That sort of tangibility doesn't come through. And there's something that's not as, you know, I don't know. It's not that one
you
is
you can't
better.
Hold it.
Right. There's something about holding a device or something like, it's like, hey, wow, I'm holding this thing that I made and it does something. That's really, really neat.
Yeah. No, that totally makes sense. So let's talk a little bit more about the Raspberry Pi. Tell us a little bit more about what it does, what it can't do, and what are some of the limitations that people should be aware of too?
Sure. So the Raspberry Pi, as I said, it's a computer and it has a desktop environment. It runs Linux, the free operating system. So a lot of the stuff you see out there that people are doing with Linux, you can do on Raspberry Pi. And so that means also that those things that are, let's say, Windows only, they can't really run on Raspberry Pi. It really has to be something that's available for Linux. The great thing is that there are so many Linux users out there that there's got to be someone out there who's wondered, hey, how do I do X in Linux? And then So hopefully some way that you're a couple steps closer to doing that thing on Raspberry Pi as well.
And tell us a little about the cost. How much does it cost? Where can I get it? All that stuff.
Yeah, so it's a bare bones computer board. So for $35, you get a Raspberry Pi. It doesn't have a hard drive of its own, so you use a micro SD card. So that's the same kind of card you put into a digital camera, for instance. So you can get them at a drugstore for, you know, maybe $15, or you get them online much, much cheaper. And that acts as your hard drive for it. Then, of course, you want to connect a keyboard, monitor, and mouse to it. Hopefully, you have one lying around and you don't need to buy one. I think it's better for the environment to find one maybe on the junk shelf of your local school, or, you know, a lot of IT departments at companies have extras of these things that you can kind of co-opt for yourself and repurpose for your own use. A monitor, you know, with the case of the monitor, it has an HDMI output. So you can hook it up to your TV screen if you want it, most modern monitors will connect to it. There's also an analog output. So if you have a really old TV with one of those RCA analog inputs, you can connect your Raspberry Pi to that as well. So I think there's a great sort of environmental impact there, where you can use old equipment as well and use them as computing devices.
Yeah, I like that. So I have my Raspberry Pi. I got, you know, the keyboard from Goodwill. I found a mouse lying around. I put it all together. What do I do next? How do I start working on my Raspberry Pi?
Well, and that's up to you. You can, if you want, launch the Python interactive command line. You can start coding in Python. You can launch Scratch, which is the drag and drop programming language. There's Wolfram on there, which is a free for Raspberry Pi users. It's free to use. Another programming language that's more math based. If you want, launch Minecraft. And what's great about it is, so there's a version of Minecraft that's preloaded on there. We give you everything you need so that you can jump right into Python and start hacking away at your Minecraft game, so that if you want to build your own world programmatically by using code and loops, you can do that, which I think is just a great motivation for a young person to learn a little bit about coding, so that they don't have to click for every block that they want. They can write a little bit of code and build a wall or build a pattern of some kind.
Yep, that's a good point, because, you know, at the end of the day, you do still have to actually code to work on the Raspberry Pi. So are there any other prerequisites? You know, do you need to learn about electrical engineering at all? Do you need to understand what volts and amps are? Like, are there certain things that you probably should look up before going into making?
Yeah, so, you know, it's not a requirement that you know about electronics at all. But it's a good way to learn about it. Anything you do with Raspberry Pi, you could take it a few steps further and connect your electronics directly to the pins that are on Raspberry Pi. And if those of you who are familiar with Arduino and its pins, how you can, let's say, connect an LED to it, or connect connect an LED and then connect a button as an input, you could do the same with Raspberry Pi. So that's how you can kind of help your practical and physical inventions come to life using a computer.
And for the actual software coding part, you know, how much Python do I need to know before I can be useful?
You know, that's a good question. If your purpose is to build a robot, you're going to need there's a little bit of work involved in figuring that out.
Yeah.
But, everyone's got to start somewhere. And so you can do the really, really basic Python stuff to start, where you're just sort of echoing things to the command line, or you're running loops to draw things on screen. But it's not that many steps further until you're getting that LED to blink, or you're having it respond to a button and playing a sound. We have a bunch of resources on our site at raspberrypi.org that really talk you through how to get from connecting one button and having it play a sound to connecting 10 buttons and having it play 10 different sounds.
Yeah, that's good to know. It's good to know that you don't have to, you know, be a really great software engineer to do hardware. You kind of just need just enough to get going.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many people out there who have made code libraries that make it so easy to do this. Just like those people who use Arduino the code is very readable and understandable. There are people out there who are just members of our community, not even people who work for Raspberry Pi, who have made code libraries that you just, we show you how to import that code library, and then you're off and running, and you have something that's fairly readable. It's almost like reading, like, hey, if this, then turn pin one on, and that will light up an LED.
So you mentioned the LED blinking, which I think is considered the hello world of hardware. Yeah. And I'm wondering, are there other similarly simple beginner projects like that that you can recommend for people to get started?
Yeah, absolutely. So in our resources section, we have a ton of really simple projects. I mentioned the one which is the sort of sound sampler project, where it shows you how to hook up a button to Raspberry Pi and how to associate that button with a particular sound using Python. I think that's a great one because you learn a little bit about how inputs work and how you have to use code to check what the state of that input is, whether the button is pushed or not. And how that is different from what would be called doing what's called an interrupt, where you like latch on something onto that pin and you tell the code to say, hey, if you ever see that pin change, do this, which is different than saying, hey, what's the state of the pin? Hey, what's the state of the pin? Hey, what's the state of the pin? Over and over and over again. And so that's one of the basic things you learn early on about that.
Tell me a little bit about the Cycle Chaser project. What was that and how did you get the idea for it?
So the Cycle Chaser project is a projection that goes off the back of your bike and shows an animation based on how fast you cycle. So in the case of the one that I made, the faster I cycle, the faster an animated galloping horse goes behind me. And the project is really mostly just for the fun of it. But it's based on another project I did called the Dynamic Bike Headlight, which had information about your ride being shown from a projector pointed out ahead of you. It uses a Raspberry Pi, a battery-operated projector, and then a sensor on the wheel is called a Hall effect sensor. And that Hall effect sensor is basically just lets you know when there's a magnetic field nearby. And so you could get the speed of your bike based on how many times that sensor gets actuated in, let's say, a second. So, it was a really, really fun project. The idea here is, though, that you could put in any animation on, or you can use the code to have, for instance, the faster you go, the more flames come out from the back of your bike on the projection on the ground. It's more of a fun thing than practical, you know, but it was a lot of fun to make it.
That's so awesome. And I think you said that it was based on a different project that you did where it would have projected from the front somehow.
Yeah, so that was the dynamic bike headlight. The idea being that if you're riding at night, you have a headlight ahead of you. But what if that headlight could show information about your ride or where your next turn is without having to look down at something? And so projected on the ground ahead of you would be maybe, hey, take a right. And the version that I made only showed the speed that you were going, just because I only wanted to get it out there and say, hey, like, what do you guys think of this idea? But with a little bit more code and maybe a little bit more hardware, it could be a pretty cool thing to have in the future where information can be out ahead of you on the ground.
Yeah, I like that so much. It was especially the fact that the galloping horse sped up with you. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to make that, and I got a really great reaction. I think people had a lot of fun with that.
So when I first saw the Cycle Chaser project, my first thought was, this is really cool, but I feel like it would cause a couple of accidents, because if I were driving right next to it, I would look at it and go, oh my God, that's so interesting, and then I would crash. Did you have any of these problems when you're actually writing it out, or how did you deal with that?
So yeah, you're absolutely right. I think I made this more as to say, like, hey, what would this look like? What would this act like? It was kind of a very rough prototype. And I agree that there's a possibility of some danger there. But I've never let danger stop me from trying something out to see how it works. So we hadn't really taken it that much out onto the open streets. And I did most of my riding in places where there was a safe spot to try it out and see how it works.
I love the idea of danger never stopping you from making things. So you are an evangelist for the Raspberry Pi Foundation, which just sounds like so much fun. What does that mean? What do you get to do all day?
So I get to do anything that advances Raspberry Pi's mission, which is all about getting kids and adults alike to learn how computers work and how to use them. So that can take in many, many different forms. Sometimes it's just talking to teachers and librarians about how they use Raspberry Pi and getting their feedback. It's going out to see people who use Raspberry Pi in projects and products and talking to them and seeing how they use it. Sometimes it's a matter of going and looking and finding people who are doing interesting things with it, and then in turn having Raspberry Pi go promote and show off what we're doing. I get to do lots of fun things, like go to Maker Faire. It's an incredible opportunity for me. It is so much fun to go and talk about something I'm so passionate about and something I like so much, and also have it be for a really good cause and getting people to learn how to code. And I think that that's just it's just such an exciting and such a fun thing to do.
So I imagine you get to work with many different people, and you get to see people and see how they interact with Raspberry Pi, what they do with it, how they get started. And I'm wondering, do you see any common issues or problems or barriers to entry for people who kind of want to get started but maybe aren't going all the way or just haven't kind of jumped the gun a bit? Do you see anything along those lines?
Yeah, I think there's a lot more we can do to help people get started. And as they say, Rome wasn't built in a day, and we have to, you know, figure out how someone who doesn't know anything at all can really feel comfortable on it, but without making it like a Fisher-Price My First Computer. We want the experience to be a real computing experience, but we don't want anyone to feel uncomfortable in it. So the decisions we make really have to walk a fine line about how we do things. And this is mostly the engineers and developers who look at how to you know, create software for Raspberry Pi and improve the software on the Raspberry Pi. So I think what we need to do then is to provide lots and lots of resources, which we, you know, constantly our education team are out there, and they're talking to teachers, they're developing resources, they're developing kits, they're developing many different ways so that any possible skill level can jump onto Raspberry Pi and figure out what's going on and get started with it.
How do you see the Raspberry Pi Foundation in the context of the larger maker movement? What is its role, and what do you hope it accomplishes in that larger picture?
So yeah, Raspberry Pi is a huge, huge success in the whole maker realm. And I, as I said before, I came to Raspberry Pi from that maker realm, and I wanted to incorporate this computer into my project. And we absolutely love that because, you know, even though the it's really meant to teach you about computing, I think a huge motivation for people to learn on their own is by creating something that they want to make. You know, if you want to make your own, let's say, alarm for your home, and you really want it to be custom, and you have an idea for how the code might make it just right for you, let's say you want it to send out a tweet when your front door opens or something like that, that motivation to create that thing that doesn't exist is a great way to learn on Raspberry Pi. So the Raspberry Pi being in this maker realm is just another avenue. It's another like entry point into learning about computing.
So right now, I think the maker movement is definitely a hot topic. A lot of people are getting started, and the barrier to entry is a lot lower because so many things are so much cheaper. What do you hope comes out of the maker movement in the long run? What do you think, or what do you hope that it does for us in a higher sense?
My dad sat me down in front of a computer at a really, really early age, and that has paid off really, really well for me in terms of, how I'm comfortable with in computers and how I can create with them. It really, like, it was a huge passion thing for me. And so I think, you know, I'm hoping that with Raspberry Pi and with the maker movement, that there are more kids out there who, you know, are getting the opportunity to, you know, do what I did and do what others are doing, and that no one is left out. And that's why creating a cheap computer really helps with that. It helps with it. You know, in fact, it's better than when I was a kid because we all shared a single computer, and, you know, I would get in big trouble if I broke the computer. And so if Raspberry Pi is out there and every kid can have their own Raspberry Pi, or any kid who wants one can get a Raspberry Pi, then they can maybe hack with impunity and make and build without being worried about breaking a home computer.
I like that. That's a really good point. I remember reading a blog post some time ago about, you know, the hard part about being a tinkerer at a young age is you're always told not to break stuff. Like, you're not supposed to take apart the toaster because then you're going to break the toaster. So this idea of having these electronics and these gadgets that are okay to break and that are meant to be breakable, I think will definitely help in that mindset.
Yeah, and Raspberry Pi is designed in a way so that it is pretty hard to break it. You know, if something goes really, really wrong, most of the time you can just get a new SD card and or you can re-image your SD card and put a new operating system on there and you're back where you started. But that's part of the design and that's part of how it's all about, so that you can really, you know, the price lets you afford failure. And that's the words of Linus Torvalds, the founder of Linux, the father of Linux. He was interviewed talking about Raspberry Pi. And I love that idea, being able to afford failure. You know, even if you really do mess up your Raspberry Pi, it was only $35. You get another one.
Yeah, I like that too. So next, let's move on to rapid fire fill in the blanks. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number one, worst advice I've ever received is?
The worst advice I ever received has to do with being too careful. When you're at the point where you're just getting started, you don't have to worry about security. You don't have to worry about getting things exactly right. You just need to make it and show that it works. Worry about all the being careful stuff for later, you know.
So who gave you that advice, and at what point did you realize that, that wasn't very good advice?
So yeah, that advice comes in various forms in different ways. You know, if you look at forums, people will say like, I want to do this on my Raspberry Pi, or I want to, you know, do, I'm trying to think of a good example here, but people will be like, well, you know, you got to make sure your firewall is set and you've got to make sure that the code isn't going to have a memory leak or something like that. And it's just like, hey, wait, you know, that's getting way, way ahead of ourselves. And that's going to be a little bit, paralyzing for someone who is just wants to try something out. Like, everything I've made is a really, really rough prototype just to show like, hey, like this thing can work and here's an interesting idea and here's a way to use code to make something. It hasn't been about like, how do we scale this up to millions? Because we shouldn't be worrying about that right now.
So the question, does it scale, is not the most important thing to you.
It's not important at all. Totally ignore that. Just figure out a way to show the idea of what you want. And don't worry about like hackers hacking into your web service. And if they do, hopefully you have backups and you're fine. You know, that's like, the Raspberry Pi is a good one, is a good tool because it's a bit of a sandbox and you can't really mess it up too much.
Yeah. Number two, my first app was about.
Oh, my first app was when I was a kid, I was in DOS, I was on the command line, and I wanted to make what I called the MAT operating system. So I used DOS batch files. So I didn't like this idea that you had to like type in all these commands to execute programs. So I created these batch files, which would execute and echo onto the screen, like, here are the options of things you can do. And, you know, you hit L to launch whatever game it was that, you know, it would launch. And so I called that my operating system. And because I didn't want, I kind of, you know, at the time we didn't have the mouse yet on our computer and Windows wasn't really that big of a thing. And so I, that was the MAT OS was my first operating system as a kid.
The MAT OS. That is amazing. I love that. That's great. Number three, one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is.
I would say for the one thing I wish I knew when I first started to code is that for beginners and depending on what you want to do, there are some languages that are better than others, but learning one of them helps you learn all of them. I think it's not so much about the syntax as it is about understanding how code is executed and how to think about things. And so don't get too hung up on the language you're using, but picking a language like Python is a good thing to choose because it's pretty agnostic and you can kind of get a lot done really easily. And it can take you in a lot of different directions. And when you've learned it and you have it down pat, then you can go off into all and learn about why this other particular language is better, and you'll find yourself learning it really fast. So don't worry too much about what language you're picking. But just get learn something.
I love that so much. Yeah, I spent a lot of time when I first started to code thinking about and worrying about what language should I do? Will I regret it? Da, da, da. And people ask me that question all the time. And you're right. It kind of doesn't really matter. It's just good to pick one and go with it.
Yeah, if your goal here is to just learn, then yeah, you'll be learning no matter what, and you'll be learning a lot of general stuff and more than you even realize. It's like you're almost just learning the words you should be Googling for when you're looking for when you're trying to figure out your next language.
Yes, definitely. So, do you have a couple of shout outs for us?
Yes. Yeah, so there are a few things that are, I think, out there that are really, really been helpful for me. I mentioned learning Python, for instance, and I learned Python using a book by Zed Shaw, and it's online for free called Learn Python the Hard Way. The title is not that great because it sounds like it's not a good experience, but this is, I think, the best way to learn Python and learn just about programming generally. It really takes you from knowing nothing about it to really like such a far, far advanced stage of Python that, you know, I just think is great. And it's very, very well written, very well supported. Learn Python the hard way. I absolutely recommend it.
Very nice. And yeah, we had Zed Shaw on the podcast some time ago, and he did a really great job.
Oh, he's great. He's great. That was great. Awesome. Another thing I love is Adafruit, and this is especially for makers. Adafruit is an online store. They sell a lot of the electronic bits and bobs that you can connect to a Raspberry Pi or an Arduino or any of the other the things out there. They develop their own products that are really well supported. And then they have this entire learning system that has a ton of how-tos. You want to connect a motor to your Raspberry Pi? Here's the step-by-step for how to do that. And here's everything you need. And of course, for them, it's great because the step-by-step has a link to their store, which, you know, you could kind of like throw everything into your cart and you've got everything you need to have your Raspberry Pi connect to a motor so you can start on your robot, for instance. So Adafruit, they're really great. They have great products and they have great, resources to support those products, which is just like absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, they do tons of videos and webinars and that kind of stuff too.
Yeah, and Ask an Engineer is they do that on Wednesday nights, their live streaming show. It's so much fun to watch. They talk about just kind of all the stuff that's going on with them, what they're, you know, and they're interested in all kinds of things. They're not just interested in Raspberry Pi. They're interested in drones and 3D printing. And these are all things that can come together quite nicely. And so it's neat just to hear what's going on. And Lamour Fried is just like just a wonderful supporter of the maker movement, and she's really smart, and so it's neat just to listen to her talk and answer questions from the audience.
Yeah, and I love that, you know, as CEO, she still does that. You know, she's still, you know, very visible every week and helping
us. Yeah. Yeah, that show is absolutely fantastic. The company has just got the right spirit. I really like them a lot.
Anything else?
I would say one more shout out I would make is to Open Frameworks. And this is for someone who's getting kind of comfortable with code and specifically C or C++. If you want to make something that's creative, Open Frameworks is just a way to make it really easy to program graphics and program sound and interactivity and to do web stuff. It's a big library or a framework rather that can help you get stuff done with code. And the project that you brought up, the Cycle Chaser, that was written in Open Frameworks. It was really easy for me to write the code to have the image appear through the projector. And it was really easy for me to write the code to advance those frames and to get the sensor information off the wheel. And that's all me standing on the shoulders of all the people who put all the hard work into Open Frameworks. So I really gotta like hand it to them for creating such a great tool that I use on a regular basis. And it works great on Raspberry Pi.
That's awesome. So I've got a few shout outs of my own. You mentioned Maker Faire a little bit earlier, and that was actually one of my shout outs. If you are curious, but you're not quite ready to maybe buckle down and do a whole hardware project on your own, if there is a Maker Faire near you, you should definitely, definitely go. It's a huge fair, yeah. That celebrates hardware, and there's robots, and you get to try soldering, and there's 3D printers and Arduinos and Raspberry Pis, and just just so many incredible things and incredible people there to kind of expose you to the world of hardware and making. And they happen, I believe they happen all over the world. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So last year they had 100 maker fairs all over the world. There's a big one in San Mateo that's in May. And then there's a big one in New York City that's in September. And then they have mini maker fairs that I think this year they're planning about 150 mini maker fairs all over the world. So there's hopefully one near everybody out there.
So what's the difference between a maker fair and a mini maker fair?
So mini maker fair is like independently produced. Okay. If people are familiar with TED and TEDx, for instance, maker fair, the two big maker fairs are really produced by Maker Media, the company that runs the whole operation. And then these mini maker fairs have independent organizers that get resources and license all the trademark stuff.
Got it. Okay. Very nice. So yeah, and especially if you have kids, you're looking for a nice family outing, this is definitely the place to go. They will completely geek out in the best way. You'll have a lot of fun.
I love Maker Faire.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good. First one I went to, I think it was 2 years ago, and oh my God, it just blew my mind.
Yep.
Yeah. The second shout out I have is actually a program the Raspberry Pi is doing called the Creative Technologist Program. And it seems like a really, really great thing. So if you're between the age of 16 and 21 and there is some creative thing that you're really interested in and you think that digital technology and hardware would really help make that thing a reality, you can apply. It's a 12-month mentoring program, and you get software support and hardware support. You get individual and group mentoring sessions from the Raspberry Pi Foundation. I don't know if that means, Matt, or would you be a possible mentor in this program?
I would happy to talk to them.
Might stop in.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, might stop by once in a while. So maybe you'll run into Matt at some point too. But if you've got that creative spirit and you want to enhance it with technology, definitely check out the Creative Technologists program.
That's great. It's such a great thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really. Someone actually tweeted it to me, I think, like a week ago. And I was like, oh, this is perfect timing for when Matt gets on the show.
Creative technologist is really a new sort of title. And it's great that it used to be people who kind of like, you know, people who are well already have plenty of experience in coding and arts. And now it's great to see that younger and younger people can think about being a creative technologist and try their hand at it.
Yeah. And, you know, I was actually very curious why the emphasis on creativity and art for this program. Where did that come from? Do you know?
Yeah, this comes from this idea that there are many points of entry for people to use technology. It's not just for the people who are inclined to use it for like this sort of hardcore engineering. And it's not just that. We want to show that technology is used in all kinds of fields. And if you're an artist, you can use technology. And it's an incredible motivation to learn technology is by creating art and creating interesting things. And that's definitely like my realm as well, is more I want to create interesting things and be a little bit more artistic and fun with it, rather than necessarily just like solving a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like that because I feel like it helps expand the definition, or at least the idea of what a maker is, right? Because you're right. I still think of, when I think of a maker, I think of like a hacker, hardware engineer, kind of, you know, usually a guy. And by opening it up to be something more creative and artsy, you're including all these different types of people into that conversation, which I think is really great.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I love seeing what artists do with technology. There's just so much really, really good work being done in that realm.
Yeah, definitely. And my last shout out is a sponsored shout out from Thinkful. So it's that front end web development class I mentioned at the very beginning. It's a great program, part time, really, really flexible. And through that, you get to learn HTML, CSS, JavaScript. You actually get to do a little bit of UX design too, which is really interesting. And as I mentioned, podcast listeners get 10% off. So go to thinkful.com/codenewbie and check it out. If you want to join the conversation, you can join us on Code Newbie Discourse, our online forum for people excited about code, or you can chat with us every week on the Code Newbie Twitter chat. Just search for #CodeNewbie and tweet with us every Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And as I mentioned, this is part of our March is for Makers celebrating hardware and making. So make sure to go to marchisformakers.com to look at all the blog posts and videos. And actually, we have a video, Matt, I don't know if you've seen it yet, but it's a Raspberry Pi 101 that Scott and I did, where basically he walked me through the Raspberry Pi, and it was just a really great, really great entry level video for people interested in what it looks like and how it works and all that.
That's great. Yeah. Love it. Love it.
So you can learn more about all that as well as show notes on this episode at codenewbie.org/podcast. Thank you again, Matt, so much for joining us. Do you want to say goodbye?
Bye. Thank you so much. This was so much fun.
Thanks for listening. See you next week.